welcome to another episode of the Albion Royal here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're caressing your ears, thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it seems a lifetime since we watched any football, but fear not, the new season is finally here, and we can all get down with that funky league action once again. So, today we head to Vicarage Road, where last season we should have come away with the points and Antti Knockaert was very lucky to escape serious injury. One thing we know is that we need to add more wins on the road to our repertoire this season. Can we start with this one? Also this week we saw the transfer window close for Premier League clubs and we saw the giant centre-back Dan Byrne arrive from Wigan, only to be sent back until January. And we also welcome a Champions League winner to the Amex in the shape of Spanish fullback Martin Montoya, who joins from Valencia. However, the window for the Championship and the rest of Europe is still to close and there's still time for others to leave. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back Justin Brentel, and we will also hear from the Watford-born Bob Booker. So, welcome to the show, everyone. Have you got football fatigue, Justin? Is the season starting too soon for you, or are you ready for it?
No, I'm definitely ready for it. Even with the World Cup, the hot summer has sort of has seemed to kind of drag on a bit, so can't wait.
You say hot summer. We're sat here in the studio here,
drenched.
Like drying off at the moment. But
it's a summer of mixed fortunes. We've had, what was it, 2 months of no rain, and now we've had 1 day of 2 months rain.
Yeah, and the ground just isn't ready for it.
It's not ready for it.
Now everything's underwater. So,
absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to be taking a boat up to Watford tomorrow.
Today, tomorrow,
another temporal faux pas.
Last week,
yes. So, Justin, I mean, with AD's point there, I mean, it seems that the World Cup only finished 5 minutes ago, and it was a sort of a great tournament. But so, you know, are you ready for the full season? I mean, do you have football fever, or do you think, well, let's see how this goes because there's another terrifying season ahead of us?
No, I think I am ready for it, but you need to watch your first match, I think, to kind of light the touch paper because you don't quite know what's going to happen. So that's kind of the exciting bit. Are we going to turn up today and play very well like we did against Watford away in the last season? Or are we going to lose 3-0 and be overly depressed?
Thanks for that, Chuckles.
Well, this is the shortest pre-season since 1966.
What do you mean?
In terms of from when the World Cup final finished until the first
league. The World Cup final. Oh, I see, yes, because the World Cup final then was, July the 30th?
Yeah.
But those days, the football season didn't start until the third week of August. But yes, I take your point.
But I mean, from memory, I always seem to remember that the World Cup was usually around the first week of July, the World Cup final.
I'd have to look it up, but I think probably mid-June to mid-July is the thing that works most.
It's because there's more teams in it and it's gone on longer.
I actually think it just suits everyone's season better. They've all sort of synchronised themselves. But no, it's fine. I mean, you know, we've got a complete mess next time. So, you know, let's celebrate what we've got.
But, I mean, there does seem to be an element of football fatigue, not just with ourselves, but generally going into the league season. It seems like
We haven't sort of like got the spark. We haven't got the fire. But then I think there's a different concern at the beginning of this season compared to what was last season. I mean, this time last season, we were entering into the unknown. We knew it was going to be a struggle. We weren't going to have all the wins that we'd have over the previous two seasons. You know, hey, we're going to be playing Man City, Man United, Arsenal. You know, and they would be, you know, they'd be looking down on us. They'd be sort of like considering with all due respect, we should be beating teams like Brighton, and probably this season they will as well. But this time around, we're a little bit more savvy. We're a little bit more knowledgeable, and that knowledge, I think, is actually what's a little bit, I'm guessing, is a little bit more terrifying. You know, we're playing Watford. It's going to be a much easier start to this season than the one we had last year, and we know that Watford are beatable. And I think that's probably what's a little bit nerving is, right, if we can't beat Watford, then, oh my God, we're in trouble, and the last 37 games this season are going to be awful.
But Justin, is second-season syndrome, is that actually a thing?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. But I do believe that the club has taken measures to certainly keep the first 11 on their toes. So if any of the starting team today are coming out thinking that it's kind of a stroll in the park, but they're going to be proved very wrong. There seem to be players in almost every position that will take their place in the blink of an eye. So no player can relax at all.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say, the we often say with Chris Hughton, and the players have come out on and said this as well, that he doesn't allow them to get too high when they win or too low when they lose.
So, well, he doesn't, but yeah. you saw what happened when we got promotion against Wigan.
Who Dan Burn was playing for that day. But it was... going into it, you've got to warn against complacency. Like, you know, we've been there, done that. Shane Duffy this week has talked about we haven't got that fear of those big clubs anymore.
Well, I think that there's a fine line between fear and complacency. I mean, when it comes to playing the likes of Manchester City, who could, you know, they blow anyone away on their day. I mean, we lucked out by playing on the first day of the season. They hadn't got into their full stride. But if you talk about that fear, but then the complacency, I think, is taken away by the fact that we've had this, and we'll talk about it shortly, this amazing transfer window, which Chris Hughton wrongly predicted was going to be quiet. I mean, if that was quiet, then, you know...
You know, Chris Hughton typically understated.
Yes, what's noisy. So every single, as Justin pointed out, every single player has now got a much better challenger for their position. This is assuming that the team that, as you pointed out on the show last week, the team that finished the end of the season is, you know, there's a good chance that probably 9 or 10 of those are going to start this season, if the nonce gave us anything to go by. Now, it's either that or Chris Hughton was calling Watford's bluff and saying, hey, I'm going to play last season's team, but I'm not going to let you know what I'm going to do with this season's team. We don't know. So... the complacency, I think, is going to be eliminated on the fact that we've got some excellent replacements who hopefully will be, you know, ready to step up to the mark. The fear, I think it's quite right not to fear them so much, but then, you know, we didn't have... I mean, Liverpool stuck 9 past us last season. Man City stuck, 5 past us. Chelsea stuck 6. So you still have to play a lot better. And this is something that Chris Hughton has actually alluded to, especially when it comes to defending set pieces. He was of the opinion that the second half of the season we were a lot better. And, you know, if we'd have defended those set pieces at the beginning of the season a lot better in the way that we had the second part of the season, we'd have climbed 3 or 4 places. So it's not just fear, it's actually about learning as well. It's education, it's absolutely everything.
Okay, I mean, Justin, we have been shopping, and as Al correctly said, there's more competition for places. We did see a couple of them last week against Nantes. I mean, can you take anything out of that game at all?
It's difficult. It's very difficult.
No.
what was nice was to see the little flashes of bits and pieces. So Johanna Batch, there were a couple of things he did. His positioning.
Is that just you trying to make it sound like Adam El Abd?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Johanna Batch.
Let me rephrase that. Ali J was... there were a couple of flashes, a couple of things I like that he did. Basuma as well. There was one incident where he kind of took it past a couple of players. He looked pretty good. So you see these flashes, but until it becomes a competitive football match, it's kind of hard, I think.
We're not going to find out. We're not going to learn until sort of September, October, by the time everyone's bedded in. And don't forget, I mean, we're previous seasons. It was interesting talking about second season syndrome. After we didn't win at Middlesbrough, you know, that second season of challenging, actually, we absolutely smashed it. But when it comes to... the team that you play. Yes, we've probably learnt bits and pieces, but bearing in mind the starting side was only Bernardo was the change. No, we didn't learn anything at all apart from actually not gave away a couple of really moody goals.
Well, this is true, but I mean, it was. I mean, do you think? I mean, it was only Brazilian Bernie who actually started from the new signings. Mm. And that was.
And he looked quite comfortable, I thought.
Yeah, he looked fine.
Yes,
it wasn't spectacular, just fine.
I think it's go on. Yeah,
I think that'll be the same today. But I also think Ali G will be Ali J. Ali J will
You're
be
massive.
Ali J will be the other player who starts today because
can you do it
Izquierdo is sidelined.
Yeah, can you do it on a cold, windy night in Slough though?
Yeah, well, with the Englefield Green massive. I think that when Jakhanbash came on, when Basuma came on, I mean, we didn't learn a huge amount from the vast ocean of signings that Chris has made. we didn't learn a huge amount, apart from Jakubowicz looked fairly comfortable then, but then he was a top scorer in Eredivisie last year. Bissouma is, I think, possibly has the potential of being an absolute world beater. But then, having said that, we said these sorts of things at the beginning of the season before when we were waxing lyrical about Roland Bergkamp once upon a time. Do you remember that? So, I mean... With that Nantes game and learning or not learning a great deal, it was pretty much the same side and the same setup and the same, at times, ploddery of last season. Now, with all these new players, and depending on how long they're going to take to settle in, that's when we're going to work out whether Chris Hughton has massively changed his setup and his style. Now, whether we're going to find that in the first game or the first half dozen games, we don't know. I mean, therein lies the excitement. Yeah.
Al makes a very good point there, Justin. It does take players a little time to settle in, and we saw that in particular with Davy Prepa last season, Esquerdo to a certain degree as well.
Gross as well.
Yeah. And Matty Ryan, of course, right, yeah, at the beginning of the season was, yeah.
It was a little bit of a dropsy, wasn't
but,
it?
But one thing we do know is that Chris trusts last season's squad, and I think he'll give me an opportunity to drop you.
Yeah, definitely, and fingers crossed with injuries, the new players will have to play their way into the team kind of when they're ready rather than be thrown in like Davy Prepa, because I think the Stevens-Kyle partnership was penciled in for Man City last year. Obviously, in the match against Atletico Madrid, poor Beram kind of got injured again. So, and Prepa looked well out of his depth against Man City. But giving him three or four matches after that, he actually looked the good player we know he is.
Well, when you saw him play for the Netherlands, he plays a little bit further forward. So even then, he's not in necessarily a particularly sort of familiar position. I mean, it's one he's now had a season of playing, but you can see him sort of straining at the leash to want to get further forward. But thankfully, he had the discipline to do as Chris told him, which we saw released a little bit. I mean, don't forget, him and Stevens were in second place equal for assists. I mean, obviously Gross was miles away with everyone, but it was Stevens, Izquierdo and Prepa were in second place for the assists. So it's not as though, you know, we're talking about, you know, rubbish here. Far from it.
But that's one thing where the team does actually need to improve. We need more goals from other players. We don't know how much we're going to see of Glenn Murray this season.
Well, this is it. I mean, it's again something that we're talking about, that Chris was talking about on the fans forum the other night, was, yes, Murray's starting, but you know he's getting to be an old man. Andoni said was a, and he did say it was Andoni. I wasn't sure if it was Andon or Andoni, but it was. So Florin, he can sort of stretch the game. Lacadia can do whatever it is he can do, which is I think sing mostly.
He's just got a new single out.
Yes, joy, deep joy. But yeah, I mean, who would you see in that case, Justin, would be your sort of preferred, bear in mind obviously we haven't seen the others, but who would you be your preferred man up top?
I've got to, for the time being, just because I haven't seen the other two properly, it's got to be Glenn Murray, but hopefully he's going to kind of be, it'll be like kind of bringing out your special cutlery. So hopefully he won't have to play too many matches, and we can have him kind of when we need him throughout the season.
Well, it came off after 10 minutes against Norwich, yeah, which didn't help, did it?
No. Justin, this would suggest that you've actually got special cutlery.
I was about to say, tell us about your special cutlery.
Why special?
Is it all Glenn Murray shaped? you put it on your forehead?
Some sort of pre-life in Victorian Britain, I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm interested in Lacadia. I don't. There's got to be something about him. He must do something. He did look very, very good against Coventry City,
fourth division side.
But that's Coventry City. I think, yeah. Let's wait till he gets a couple of games with Grosch behind him and see what he can really do. I mean, substitute appearances against teams like sort of Man City, and he did score against Swansea or Hammers last season.
So, but when you watch him play, he. For me, he looked a lot better in a two, which Hughton did suggest last season that Lacardi is going to be one for this year, and we wanted to bring Andoni at the same time as well.
So can't have Murray all the time now, can
which
we?
Which would suggest a change in formation, but it's
I think therein lies the point is about. You know, because we had so little choice last season. We had Murray, we had Hemed nominally. And he played Gross, and he didn't have Baldock. He preferred either Izquierdo. I mean, he preferred out-and-out wingers. But we had up front, we had so little choice. So if Gross was to come off, then it would be more of a defensive midfielder that would come on. Kyle nominally, but, you know, so this time around, we've got some more attacking options. So therein lies the point is, how on earth does he make it work? And that's what we've got to wait and see.
Absolutely. I mean, and we also had, even last season, we had in Davy Proper, someone who plays that number 10 role that Gross plays.
Yeah.
He plays it internationally, and he's successful and scores
but
goals.
But he doesn't play it in our squad. I mean, he can play the Gross role, but he doesn't play the Gross role. So when Gross does come off, it is almost invariably someone like Kyle who will come on, who will play an even more, you know, sort of withdrawn role, leaving Murray even more exposed.
Okay, well, let's talk about the players that we have brought in this week, which adds even more confusion to the mix.
Okay,
because we
signed
two.
Who are you going to go with first?
We signed two defenders. We'll start with Dan Byrne, because
it's a disco inferno.
Yeah.
Okay, so we signed someone with a broken foot, hand him back to the original club. Wait for him to get mended again. I get the point, because I think someone said he's on a 4-year deal that he's on.
Yeah.
So we're going to get him for 3.5 years. And, you know, someone else can look after him. I couldn't actually say whether he's any good or not, but, you know, there's a reason why we signed him.
He's a giant. He's exactly the same height as Peter Crouch.
Right.
6'7". So maybe we're going to start bringing out those basketball shirts again.
But is he? I mean, bearing in mind that when the ball's at his feet, it's so far away from him. Is he going to be any good on the ball? Because let's face it, Houghton will. In fact, all managers that we've had over the past 10 years insist on ball-playing defenders.
Well, he scored 6 goals last season as well.
From headers,
from
corners.
Right,
okay. Take note, Shane Duffy. You've now got competition. And that is one of the most... with Duffy and Dunk are two pretty good defenders, but when it comes... And we saw it again against Nantes. When it comes to corners, iffy defending in the first, but Justin, what do they have to do to score from a corner? I mean, is there a magic technique that we need?
I think in the Championship we did fairly okay. It's just as soon as we got into the Premier League,
we've been clean headers.
Yeah, Duffy was going through a good phase kind of for Ireland and stuff. But yeah, every time he goes to him, and these aren't kind of when he's got two or three players jostling him for the ball. These are single headers on his own, and they just hit the back of his head. They go straight up, they go left, they go right. They go anywhere, actually, apart from near the goal. But it seems to... The only defender who didn't sort of catch that sort of contagious, not able to head it at goal disease was Connor Goldson. So obviously, that's not going to work anymore. But
apparently, there is a confidence thing with this. I mean,
you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a talent thing. It's been alluded to well, we know that Shane Duffy scores lots of headers for Ireland. Throughout his career, he has done.
Right. And as Justin said, he did in the Championship.
Yeah. So, I mean, it will come. I think if you get one, then you get two. You get two or three. You're more confident. And I don't know.
It's almost automatic. It hit his head. And like I say, Justin, you know, as he says, it'll spoon off here. It'll go up there. He'll go underground. It'll head to Rose Ed. I mean, it's everywhere. It's as if there's an anti-magnet in the goal.
You make it sound like a womble.
Okay, so Dan Byrne, he's giant. He scores goals in Championships from corners.
And he's come here knowing he's not going to be first choice. So,
well, fair enough. But, you know, has anyone noticed him before when he played for Wigan? I mean, was he in the Premier League before?
He has played in the Premier League for Fulham. He's also played for Blyth Spartans, which is always makes me happy. Yeah. Youth career was Newcastle. He's from Newcastle.
Right.
So he played New Hartley, Blyth Town and Blyth Spartans. Whoa.
Ooh.
And Darlow, of course.
And Biker Grove.
But yeah, no, he played for Fulham. 61 appearances, 1 goal for them. Went on loan to Yeovil, Birmingham.
Sorry, you reckon he played for Fulham in the Premier League?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Okay, all right. So we're not talking about, you know, sort of rubbish here.
It's, you know, I have noticed him. He scored a couple of crucial goals in the FA Cup in Wigan's brilliant cup run last year.
Okay,
all right. So, I mean, yeah, he's...
Has he scored against us?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so. I don't think anyone has for Wigan, apart from that time with Dean when they went 4-1 up at half-time, I think it was.
But perhaps the more exciting of the two, perhaps.
Go on.
Just maybe, is Champions League winner Martin Montoya.
I'll tell you what, I was at the the fans forum, the BBC could not have been more smug about that, because it was the first time ever that an announcement of a new player had been made live on air. And obviously they do it in social media, they'll do it through, you know, even the old days of doing it through the Seagull line and Tony Millard.
On but Brighton, 8049.
But, you know, Tony Bloom just turned up. They turned up at the fans forum. Three of them parked their backsides, Barber, Bloom and Houghton, and Johnny Cantor went, "Oh, before we start, we've got a bit of news for you." And everyone's going, "Ooh." And, announced the signing of Martin Montoya.
Martin Montoya Torralbo, to give him his full name.
Terrible.
Who's born in Garva in Spain.
Garva.
Garva. Okay. And, he's
probably pronounced Harva.
He's playing, and he's a right back. So, I mean, that's more competition. And so, that's Bruno Scalotto. I mean, what does that mean for Scalotto? I mean, the international window's still open. Could that mean it could be curtains for him?
Do you know what it actually says to me? It says the more likely that we'll see more often three at the back. I'm guessing.
I think that's interesting. I think Scalotto looked very good as a wing back. I remember him away against Palace, and he looked let's not talk about that.
Don't swear on air.
Montoya, I think, is I think he can play in a 4-4-2. Last night when the kind of signing came through, I was doing some chores kind of involving picking people up from Gatwick Airport, and I was trying to flick in and out of the news, and I eventually was parked at the airport, and I flicked kind of straight through the sort of North Stand chat thread on it, and straight to his kind of highlights reel without really finding out who the player was. And so I was watching this show reel on YouTube, as it were, and I could see one team was Barcelona all the time, and I was thinking to myself, why are they showing him for every team he's played for playing against Barcelona? And then the penny sank, and thought, actually, no, he must have played for Barcelona. So yes, got rid of that, went to his Wikipedia page, and 45 times for... Oh, it's right in front of me. I mean, that is astonishing. And that kind of the hair on the back of my neck stood up. That this guy, and he's not 37, he's 27.
He's 27, that's right, yeah.
Didn't he play for Inter as well?
Yeah, internationally. Only played three games for them on loan. And he also went to Betis on loan that year as well.
So he's got a fair bit of experience in La Liga.
54 appearances for Valencia, 2 goals.
Over how long, those 54 appearances?
2016 to 2018. So
54, that's most of two-thirds of the games.
Represented Spain from under-17. Teams up to 23. He's never played for the full team.
All right.
Also played for Catalonia.
Okay, so he is a possibility. We'd like to think that he is Bruno too.
Well, Valencia seems to be a happy hunting ground for us, because we've got obviously Ryan and
he has played with Matty Ryan at Valencia as well. So
okay, it's another fellow that Bruno. It's another fellow that can head over to Latino America.
Yeah, I mean, Valencia are turning into a neat little kind of feeder club for us. Maybe it's Tony Bloom's next acquisition.
Yes, Valencia, our feeder club.
Talking of Argentina, you've seen that Ujoa has gone to Mexico.
I did see that.
Yeah.
He's going to open up a restaurant over there as well.
He hasn't opened
one here. He's going to call it Latino Brighton.
Yeah. Not the owns one here, you understand. It is a myth that he owns that restaurant.
He is involved.
No, he's not. He really isn't. I promise you he's not. He just goes a lot.
Is Bruno involved?
No, none of them are. None of them are. I mean, it's just a myth.
Well, look, they have all got shares there. That's
no.
But that's just because they go so often.
Well, yeah, I mean, they might as well just go and bring their own cow in and say, all right, can you slaughter this, stick it on the grill? But, yeah.
From Argentina. Yeah.
Anyway.
Food miles and all that. Lucky. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are, as ever, delighted to be brought to you in association with Phil Shelley's magnificent old football shirts.com. And I shall be just passing over this particular jersey to young Justin here to describe
Could you describe this shirt for us, mate?
So immediately, I think Arsenal.
So we're talking about a red body, white sleeves here. Yeah, it's actually fairly plain, isn't it?
Yeah. Red cuffs. Yeah. That's about it. V-neck with kind of...
I'm loving the fact that the person's taken the picture of it on a Sabutio pitch.
Yeah, and so the sponsor is Gulf Oil. The manufacturer is Technique.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the badge.
And I can't quite read it, which is annoying.
Question for you, AD. Is this an English club?
Yes, it is.
In that case, I'm going to guess Rotherham.
That is incorrect.
Okay, or Morecambe.
That is incorrect.
Okay.
Okay, I'll tell you one of those is...
Or Accrington Stanley.
Who are they?
I'm going to go for Aberdeen.
None of those, actually. So
in England.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And this is what Phil from oldfootballshirts.com, over 90,000 shirts on there now.
Yeah. Of various getting pretty fed up of them in the back garden.
And a magnificent is too. Your shirt of the week, then, is chosen because it's nice and old, says Phil.
It is.
And it's a little bit unusual. And it looks quite nice, even though it is a little bit arsenally.
Yes,
it is. Is that a word, arsenally?
Arsenally, yes. Oh. Just be careful saying it on air.
This is the 1988-89 home shirt of League Two side Cheltenham Town. Of course, in 1988, Cheltenham were in the Vauxhall Conference, where they finished 15th under the management of Jim Barron.
The badge does say Cheltenham Town. If we'd have looked a bit closer. Yeah.
Known as the Robins, they play at the Wadden Road Stadium, occasionally in front of crowds of up to 7,066. Their historical rivalry is with Hereford, which made for a grand evening on the May the 3rd, 1997, as we stayed in the town after that game.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay.
The local fans brought us more than a couple of drinks that night, as they expressed their gratitude in us for sending the Bulls crashing out of the league. One current player that really caught my eye, says Phil, is Calvin Lumbombo. Calvin Lumbombo Kalala, in fact,
I think he's just making this up now.
He's a French striker who joined the side in the summer. And there are a few Cheltenham Bright links as well. And here's a couple to be going on with. Steve Cottrell's first club was Cheltenham. During his subsequent career, he played 11 games with the Albion on loan from Wimbledon. In 97, he became the Cheltenham manager and presided over the club's most successful years, including their promotion to the Football League for the first time ever. Clive Walker made 56 appearances for Cheltenham in the years after he left the Albion. Current keeper Scott Flinders made a dozen appearances for Brighton. I actually really liked Scott Flinders when he was here. He was a great goalkeeper.
He must be getting on a bit. I mean, he was, what, 15 years ago?
I remember him getting sent off at Old Trafford. I think he was playing for. Whilst on loan from us from the home of the tyre fire up at A23.
All right.
Yeah. Connor Goldson spent a month on loan with the Robins while still at Shrewsbury. Matt Sparrow joined the side for half a season in 2015, and he's now playing in the Western Australian Division 2 side, Joondalup United.
Okay.
And and I'm pretty sure that Alireza Jahanbakhsh was once on their books as an under 18 player before moving to Holland in 2013.
I love that thing. It's pretty sure. I mean, how many Alireza Jahanbakhshes are there? Do you remember, actually, it was probably in the later years of With Dean, we played them something ridiculous, like five times in a month or something. We had League Cup matches, we had FA Cup replay. I remember Paul Samra, you know, in welcoming out the teams, could you welcome our visitors in residence? They just sort of like kept going on and on and on. Talking of people who keep going on and on and on, we were delighted and talking about in those days. We caught up with Bob Booker earlier this week, and we just sort of like chewed the fat over what happened in the summer and what his thoughts were. And his wife Nikki Keg Shevlin joined in as well. They were actually out for a romantic meal, so I just caught up with them, and this is what they had to say. Bob, how are you?
Good evening, Alan. I'm fine, thank you. Just on my way out for nice Chinese.
Okay, whereabouts is that? Which is it? One you can recommend to us all?
Where are we going, Nick? Worthing.
We're going to Worthing. Somewhere in Worthing. There's a bizarre thing. There's me and Adi have just come in from Worthing into Brighton to do this. How bizarre is that? Happy new season, Bob. Just a couple of things. Just sort of let's look back over the summer and let's look ahead to the season ahead. First and foremost, what did you make of the World Cup this year?
Well, to be honest with you, Alan, I wasn't that interested in starting to watch it at the beginning, but as it grew after the first game or the first couple of games, I was pleasantly surprised. I was in a little bit of doubt or how it was going to pan out with the VAR and the way football is at the moment, with everybody, you know, sort of trying to nick a 1-0 win. But it's completely open World Cup, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, really did enjoy it.
What made you start off then with the lack of interest? What was your concern?
I don't know. I think being out of the game for quite a long time now, you know, I don't watch it as much as I used to. You know, my life's moved on since the Albion, although still working down at the Albion. You know, my match days are still totally focused on the Albion and going down there and seeing everybody and watching the games and what a great season it was. So apart from the Albion side of it, you know, I've probably not lost interest, but it's not such a forefront in my mind now and not so much of a necessity. I've still got love for the game, but didn't really think I was going to enjoy the World Cup. But as I say, it turned around and I really did enjoy it, and England done, you know, particularly well, and that made it more enjoyable.
Fantastic. So, I mean, you obviously, you say you're out of the game sort of mostly for the most part, but does that mean you're still teaching people how to drive cars?
I'm trying, yes. I've had a bit of a stressful day today. I had a couple of new ones, so I'm...
In the rain.
I'm parched for a nice glass of wine, just to settle my nerves. But no, thoroughly enjoying it. As I say, my life's moved on, and I'm very settled now, and love my job, and still being connected with the Albion is a lovely balance for me.
Fabulous. I mean, still being connected with the Albion, what did you make of the first season in the Premier League for the club?
Well, it was a nigh about a nail-biting one, I have to say, but it was a tough one. But I mean, the heads, you know, the lads had their heads up. They kept focused. I mean, the fans were unbelievable. You know, nobody probably really expected to do what we'd done, but it didn't go to the wire, but it got close. But the way that the lads handled it and the calmness, and the manager kept that calmness going throughout the team, I think it was just an absolutely fantastic achievement. And I have to say that this year is probably going to be a little bit harder.
Sure. I mean, you were assistant to several managers in your time at the Albion, or as Mark McGee put it, you were the one that got half a dozen managers sacked. his words, not mine. His words. Who would you most, of those half dozen you worked with, who would you most liken Chris Hughton to, of those that you had?
Oh, blimey, that's a tough one. He's probably got a mixture of all of them, really. I can imagine he can crack the whip when he needs to, like a Mickey Adams or Mark McGee. Mm-hmm. I should imagine his calmness is a little bit of Steve Coppell.
Yeah.
So his tactics, probably, he's out there with the best of them, and with Steve and Mickey and Mark. But I should imagine everybody's got their own individual style, but he's probably got a little bit of all them. But I should imagine he's a pleasure to work with, you know, just a real solid, good English manager.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, as I understand, and I hope she can hear us, and I hope you can hear her through, that Mrs. Booker, or Nikki Kegg-Shevlin, as everyone who used to listen to Southern knows. Nikki, are you there?
Oh, no, it's definitely Nikki Kegg-Shevlin, it's not Mrs. Booker.
Is it not Mrs. Booker?
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Nikki, how are you? Welcome to the Albion Roar. I believe this is your first time on the show.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for gracing our airwaves. I know that you were on Southern for a long time, and here we are, sort of, you know, in relative terms, amateur radio. I'm talking to a radio professional now, so welcome to the Roar. Are you keeping up with the football at all? I mean, do you follow Bob to the football? Do you go on your own, or, you know, how are you keeping up with the Albion at all?
Well, I try and get down to as many games as I can, but obviously demand for tickets is getting tougher and tougher as they're doing so well. But no, I do. I always have followed the Albion all my life. So yeah, I'm a lifelong Seagulls fan. So, you know, last season was incredible. They are, you know, because you know what it's like. You come up in the Premiership, you can go straight back to the game. That would have been awful. But the boys were brilliant. And I honestly think the manager is superb. I've always rated him. And the fact that when he came to Brighton, I was so thrilled that he's proved me right.
Fantastic. I mean, actually, one of those things that we do when we have someone who's on the Albion Roar for the first time, we do actually ask them for their first Albion game, and I don't think you should be an exception. So if you can go back in the midst of time, however far back it goes, I mean, can you remember your first Albion game? Do you remember the circumstances?
I can't remember who we played, but yeah. It was at the Goldstone Ground, and I used to always be down the south stand. And I used to go week in, week out, you know, for home games.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I dug out some photos not long ago from when I was at the Goldstone Ground. And they were playing Sheffield United. And we were definitely looking to see if Bob was in that game. But he wasn't. But I have memories of the team, of people like Dean Wilkin. God, I'm going to struggle now. Eric Young.
So we're talking mid to late 80s then?
Yeah, absolutely. And I always remember the cup game when Man United came down, and it was the first time I saw Beckham play, you know, a young lad. Yeah.
Yeah, we drew that game 1-1, yeah. So in all this time, so we're talking about 30 years of you watching the Albion here. Can you pick, I'm probably sort of putting you on the spot here, but can you pick your all-time favourite player? All right. Okay. Who's your favourite, and who do you think was the best? I mean, they're not necessarily one and the same.
I've got to say a team actually, and it was the team of the Cullips, the Kuipers, you know,
the Bash Street Kids,
Gary Hart, yeah. All that lot, Kerry Mayo. Those, you know, those back to back promotions. That was such a brilliant era. And being at the Withdean, which was tough for everybody, but I loved all the Withdean years. I thought those times were the best. So I would say that team was my favourite time.
I don't know about you, but any time I think of the Withdean, I can't believe I just said the Withdean. Thank you, Mickey. Any time I think of Withdean, I can either think of it being gloriously sunny or an absolute downpour, which as we're recording this now, as you're driving carefully, I hope, in an absolute downpour. For my mind, Withdean was either one or the other, and it was either brilliant or dreadful at times, wasn't it?
It certainly was, but I was lucky because I was in the South Down, so I didn't get wet like all those lovely people did in the North Down. I mean, that was proper fan sat over there and all that weather.
Yes, sunstroke and pleurisy in the same day. It was, but we got four promotions in 12 years. I mean, it's, you know, the worst ground ever, and yet, sort of, as you say, the headiest days. There were some wonderful times then.
Really nice memory. It was really friendly because it was so small that you would go in the game before the game, wander around, you'd see, you'd probably know every person in the ground, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would.
Very different now at the Amex. I mean, the Amex is absolutely amazing, don't get me wrong, but it's much more of a business and bigger, and it's got a different feel. But I, you know, obviously I love the Amex, it's been interesting to see it from the Goldstone. I didn't do Gillingham, I wasn't a real hardcore fan, but then with Dean and now the Amex, it's been such a journey.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about Withdean is because there were so fewer people in comparison, it's more personal. With the Amex, it's more impersonal because it's so huge and we are this big club. I mean, I think it was just the way that the regime operated. Dick Knight was kind of, one could argue, too open, but he was very open and sort of a lot of people were quite accessible and probably, you know, in a few cases, sorry, Bob, you got to know things. Some people got to know things that they really shouldn't have done.
Yeah, but you say that, but Tony Bloom is very accommodating, you know, to travel with the fans and speak
true
to
enough,
fans like he does. You know, we might not sort of see him very often at the home game, I think, but he is there, and I think he's very in touch with the fans, as was Dick. So, you know, we've been very blessed to have two great chairmen to get where we are. One where Dick got us there in the tough times, and now we're very blessed. Not have we got a chairman that's got very, very a lot of money, but he's put his mouth where his money is, his money where his mouth is, and, you know, he's got us to the promised land. So, you know, fair play to both of them.
Absolutely. Now, we're in the promised land, and this is our second season. Hopefully, we don't have that sort of worrying second season syndrome. So, as someone, obviously, who had several pre-seasons with the Albion, what would Chris and the various pools that seem to operate at the top of the club, what would they be doing pre-season to actually get the team ready? I mean, obviously, there's some new blood there as well, but how does the manager prepare the players, and how do they prepare themselves for a pre-season?
Well, he gets himself organised. First and foremost, he's got a back. He's got to be prepared to, you know, he's put the list out of there, what position and what players we want, or the club wants. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've gone out and signed 9 players now, which is phenomenal, really, for our second season in the Premiership. So the club has really, you either go for it or you just sort of, you know, you just peter around it and just try and stay in it. But it looks like the club's really trying to push forward and you know, get the players in that's needed to stay in this division again. So that'll be the first thing. Fitness will be very important. Most of my managers that I worked under wasn't really. It's not about the results in pre-season. It's nothing to do with the results in pre-season. Yes, it's nice to win a game and get that little bit of winning mentality, but it's about getting games and minutes for each player. Start getting his shape in his head. You know, who's going to push positions? Things like that. Getting the players to gel, especially if we've got 9 new players in. I was lucky enough yesterday to be out with the new wing, the £24 million man. I was out giving him a little driving lesson on the other side of the run. Very interesting. So
are we talking Ali Jackenbach?
Yes, I am, yes. I've got a call from the club in midweek to say that they was looking to help him have a couple of lessons having to drive on the other side of the road. So I got myself over to the training ground yesterday, and we went out for an hour and a bit, and we had a, you know, he got in the car and said, "Oh, I heard you're a legend." I said, "Well, I don't know about that, but..." So we had a good chat about football, which was great. And I've got to say, he was a very level-headed, very focused
What's it like at taking
nice,
corners?
Really nice young man. It wasn't taking too bad. A little bit wide sometimes.
Okay.
You know, very pacey, very pacey. So, no, he's very excited about his new position at the club and, you know, coming to Brighton. He said he nearly came here 3 years ago, apparently. So
apparently so.
He's looking forward to it. So, how are you getting on with the rest of the new squad and gelling in? And he said, great, everybody's made him feel welcome and the manager's great. So, you know, that will be a pre-season where you get all them players together. And it looks like the backroom staff have sort of done their work again. And now it's a case of putting them into a shape, getting them to play together and having that connection that we had last year and that team spirit. I think that was so vital last year. You know, we might not have always played the best football. We played some great football. And we played some great teams, but we was always hard working. The team was together. Mm-hmm. I think you notice that when the teams will go. Even Matt Ryan would run the full length of the pitch, and I was just, and I thought that's a really good team spirit that the manager's got. And if you've got that,
absolutely,
you start getting results or winning games or drawing games, you've got half a chance. So hopefully that can continue this season.
Well, in that case, on that note, then just last question to the pair of you. Let's go for you first, Nikki. Have you got a prediction for the season? I mean, how do you think we're going to get on?
I think we will end mid-table, and I'd be very happy with that.
Okay. Bob?
Yeah, I would like to agree with Nikki on that one. You know, it's a really hard one to predict. But as I say, it was a real hard job staying in the Premiership. And now we've got there, we've got to do that again. And that becomes harder. You know, other teams and other managers have, you know, they know Brighton now. We was a little bit of a hidden identity when we first came in it and last year. But now, like, they've played against us a few times. They've seen how we work. They've seen how we operate as a club. And so they probably would have done a little bit more homework on us this year and the new players that are coming. So it's going to be a very tough one. And I think it will be very similar to next year. I hope I'm wrong and we climb up a little bit earlier. But I think we've got enough to do it. It's how the all players gel in and we mix together. And as I say, that team spirit and what the fans are like and the group of people around the football club. Everybody's very, very focused on keeping this team in this division again.
Absolutely. Okay, listen, enjoy your Chinese.
Cheers, Alan.
Okay, and hopefully see you.
Any recommendations?
For Worthing? I can't say I can, actually. I mean, when I go out, I'm out in Brighton, so, you know, it's... No, off the top of my head. But no, have a great meal and I'll hopefully see you at the Amex this season. So Bob Booker, Nikki Kegg-Shevlin, thanks for being on the Albion Raw.
Cheers, Alan.
Thank you.
Up the Albion. See you guys.
Okay, that was Bob Booker here on the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm here with Justin Brentel and Alan Wares as we look at the other runners and riders in the Premier League this season. Justin, what's really caught your eye so far?
What's caught my eye is the media obsession with the amount of signings and the value of signings. And so teams like Tottenham or Newcastle, who haven't signed that many players, everyone has a downer on. Teams like Wolverhampton Wanderers or Fulham, a lot of pundits seem to think are going to smash the Premier League this season. So I think there's definitely a theme there. I think it can be good to go through a transfer window and not necessarily sign any people. It can be good to keep
which
best
is exactly
players.
What Spurs have done.
Mm. And so, you know, they already had a good team last year, so why do they just need to get better? And surely you can do that through consistency and having another season together.
Last season, all three promoted sides stayed up.
Yep. Quite comfortably, actually. Huddersfield with a couple of games to go, but yeah.
So, I mean, coming up this year, we've got Cardiff, obviously, and we've got...
everyone's favourites to go down.
We've got Cardiff, we've got Fulham, and we've got Wolves. Now, Fulham have actually absolutely splashed the cash this pre-season. I mean, they actually paid $35 million for one player.
Bless them.
Which is a lot. He's very, very highly rated. Actually, he was... him and Bissouma were mentioned alongside each other, so right. Maybe we got still possibly. What do you think? How do you think they're going to do this season? Do you think it's very much?
I'm trying to work out what it is. I mean, bear in mind that, you know, it's spending big money is one thing. it doesn't necessarily guarantee success, far from it. I mean, it, as Justin said, it creates headlines. This is a team that just squeaked up via the playoffs. That's not to say that they can't make massive leaps and improvements. But to do so in the space of a close season and think they're actually going to, as Justin put it, smash it, the Premier League, that's kind of wishful thinking. I'm not saying they won't. I mean, I'm not saying they won't survive and what have you, but, you know, they had been down for about 2 or 3 years, as had Wolves. You know, they'd had time to de-acclimatise, for want of a better term, from the Premier League. Yes, they're going to be a tough nut to crack, and each time we played them, you know, we couldn't get the ball off them, and then when we did, we scored, and hooray for that. But to say that when you see a lot of predictions, when they say they're going to finish sort of, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th, that takes an awful lot of doing to actually to get past that. And someone said Wolves in 7th, was it? I mean, again, it's just, you know, the numbers making people's heads spin. And people are so kind of coerced and seduced by this sort of wonderful, aren't they wonderful, they're splashing the cash. And, you know, what we didn't last year, we were safe with, as it transpired after the Arsenal game, but we didn't spend big and we were okay.
Well, we did by our standards, though. I mean, you know, I mean, we 10 million for Davy Proper.
I'm thinking, well,
15 million for Escuerdo. I mean, that's a lot of money.
In comparative terms, absolutely.
I mean,
when you're talking about 35 million for one player, and therefore Fulham are going to go flying up the tape, really?
I mean, it just makes your head spin a little bit when you think. I mean, I'm very wary of the money you're spending it on wages as well. And
yeah,
you know, you see. Exactly what Portsmouth did when they were in the Premier League, and that's what they were.
Redknapp. Need I say more?
John Yataka, you know.
I mean, I'm sure that Wolves and Fulham have actually, you know, they've properly budgeted for it, and good for them, absolutely. But this does not guarantee success. Far from it. I think that they'll be in the mix with the rest of us.
Okay, we do need to mention our friends from up the road. They've
Is Zaha gone?
No,
he
has actually stayed. But one player they have brought in is
Jordan Ayew.
Jordan Ayew, who's
got a fantastic track record in getting relegated.
Would you like to tell us about his track record?
I can remember three of them. Villa was one of them.
Villa.
The Swansea.
Yeah.
It was Lorient before that.
Yeah.
And there was I can't remember who one before that was. You'll have to remind me.
Yes, that one.
The other one as well. But, so
which is
he is hoping for 5 stars? Absolutely.
But they haven't had money to spend particularly, it seems. Their main bit of business this summer was keeping hold of Zaha.
Who made overtures to go? I mean, you know, that is a mess of a changing room, surely.
Yeah, they've also got the highest salary to turnover percentage in the
more so than Bournemouth.
League,
wow.
They're top. And so I don't think they've got any money left. To buy players, but then they obviously got this this German who's apparently the German Messi.
Oh, Max Meyer.
And apparently they beat a lot of kind of bigger clubs to his signature because it came down simply to wages, and it seems like they're paying him an absolute what's it load.
Isn't it
damaged goods? 170 grand a week. Yeah,
wow. It's an attitude problem, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, basically he went on strike and forced his way out of the club. I mean, it's very.
He sounds perfect for Sellers Park, frankly. Yeah.
But I mean, it's not quite as well. Is it as bad as the Chelsea goalkeeper whose name is
Courtois?
That's it.
Yeah, he's going to Real Madrid. I mean, I don't know.
Who basically went on strike?
Well, I mean, this is it. When they try and manufacture something, but you know, yeah, we could spend our time obsessing about the burning smell up the road. But the point is I think it's just important we do look at ourselves and make sure that we, you know, basically learn the lessons from last year and learn the lessons from how other clubs behave. I mean, these things do come home to roost. And when you look at certain clubs, Sunderland, who continue to crash and burn, as did Portsmouth, Villa managed to arrest the slide by actually bringing in Steve Bruce and did a reasonable job in the end. But there are clubs who, you know, Blackburn carried on, you know, splatting down. You know, if you've got to be properly run, and if you don't have that issue. The other thing the Palace have got, they've got to rebuild their ground.
Mm.
And if they've got this stand that somehow costs whatever it is, 90 million quid, which is basically a facsimile of the West Stand, that's going to eat into their playing budget. So keeping Zaha, fine, great, good for them. And it gives them a much better opportunity to stay in this division than him going. But you know, they because of their ground, which is clad all over, it's they're going to have issues.
Nice, nice work. Right, moving
on. Not playing at the end, by the way.
whose transfer windows really impressed you, Justin?
I thought ours was amazing. And I think what we've done is, you know, initially you won't see that many changes in the first team, but the competitive nature now is going to be no player can sort of think I've got a automatic right to play. So that's given. Other teams that have impressed. Having said what I've just did about people flashing the cash, I have sort of, you know, I think Fulham have picked up some pretty impressive players, and so Wolves. But will they all gel? Will it all work?
Well, that is the main thing.
Didn't you say just before we came on air that with Wolves they haven't spent a huge amount? They've just sort of, you know, got the players. I mean, basically they've got Portugal B, haven't they?
Yeah, Rui Patricio came for free, I believe. Yeah.
They firmed up lone players, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they've. I mean, the way it works here, I mean,
there's a touch of what they're
not. They're not
previously.
Doing it. They're not doing anything that's illegal.
No, it's fine. I mean, it's what Watford did. I mean, they got promoted on basically that Italian club's sort of loanees, and there's about half a dozen of them.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, people think they're going to be pushing top 10 this season. But that's people who know an awful lot more than I do. So we'll see. But I mean, there were a lot of sides last year that did spend an awful lot of money last pre-season and crashed and burned, didn't they? I mean, you look at the number 10s that Everton brought in last year when all they needed was defenders, really. Mm.
West Ham have had to buck their ideas as well.
And again, West Ham, that's another
they've
side.
They've spent quite big this transfer window.
But I mean, I've been quite impressed with the work that West Ham has actually done, Britain and the players they brought in. And again, with Everton, I think that they will be back in their natural position of seventh this year.
But West Ham have still got a major issue to actually rebuild the bridges with their fans about their stadium. I mean, that's going to be toxic for a long time. Even with on-pitch success, that's going to be toxic for a while.
You see, it's very weird because when we're at... I was going to say Upton Park then. That's a fraudulent step, isn't it?
The London
Stadium. When we're up there last season... When that place got going, it was really loud.
It was noise. Absolutely. Don't forget, everyone will say it's a brilliant stadium. It's just not a football stadium. You're so far away from the action. And I say, just as a joke, I took binoculars with me. And
they let you in with them as well.
Sorry?
They let you in with them as well.
They did, actually, yeah. But you needed them. I mean, and also I think the fact that we had a really good time and West Ham for both games were absolutely appalling. They were dreadful. Yes, they've spent big and they need to... Theirs is one of those where expectation is so much higher than the likes of us or even the likes of Wolves or Fulham. I mean, I would say also that's another thing that I consider about Wolves this season is the level of expectation. They have spent big and sometimes when you do that, and we have it here to a certain extent, when you spend big, there's a level of expectation which can actually outdo the reality.
You've got to be careful about that, certainly. But then if you look at Burnley, they've made two or three very sort of, I think, good transfers. So they got Gibson from Borough, who's been
Steve Gibson,
Ben Gibson,
a good level defender for a while. And obviously they've got a thing about England goalkeepers, but they're very much. I suppose their handicap is last season, and they did very well. They tend to play to a certain formula. And I remember the Amex last season, the Ginger Garlic applauding his team for kicking the ball off, and he did it a few times. That's sort of how organised they are. They're not interested playing away from home. They're not interested in having a game of football. It is just destroyed.
Not as bad as Colombia, but
no, because I don't think they have that cynical edge. I think they're a bit more professional than that, and I think it will be interesting to see if they can do that again, because my argument with Burnley is about the manager and the system, and it's not necessarily about the players at his disposal. He just needs people to be able to do a job.
I'm going to hold my hands up and say, look, I don't particularly like Burnley, but you've got to applaud what they've done. Basically, they've never spent an awful lot of money. And they've been punching above their weight. Yeah. Even when they got relegated, they kept faith with the manager. He got them straight back up again.
Do you think they can repeat the feat?
I think it's going to be tough for them this season, and I do know that all all depends on how long they stay in the Europa League and how
that
seriously
could be their undoing. Actually,
how seriously?
It?
Well, I mean, basically, a classic example is the fact that they're playing. They played last night. It's Friday when we're recording. It's Friday night,
yeah.
And they're playing Saturday.
That's not nice.
So, I mean, when the league shakes down, and if they do get through to the group stages of the Europa League, then that will balance out, and they'll be playing Thursday, Sunday. But
it's going to rip apart the first part of their season.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they've been playing competitive games now for long before everyone else in this league. So, I mean, that could come, that could all shake up. But, I mean, you know, there are other teams that struggled last year. I mean, we got rid of three perennial strugglers pretty much in all teams. That
I don't think anyone predicted West Brom at the beginning of the season, did they?
No, not particularly.
Because they had a very good... people thought they had
just
a very good
Alan Pardew
transfer window.
But, you know, it's careful what you wish for with it. I mean, Southampton, they've got Mark Hughes in charge, so we don't know what's going to happen with them. Cardiff, Neil Warnock.
We're just assuming with Cardiff that they're going to be the weakest of the bunch, but again, you can't assume that.
They got promoted, right? They finished they got automatic promotion. You don't get that without being a decent side.
Know that Warnock is an excellent Championship manager. That's a massive difference to say.
Yeah, he kind of falls between two stools, doesn't he? So, I mean, we'll see how well. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure that Sam Allardyce will be watching that situation very closely.
That merry-go-round.
I think Cardiff will play very much like Burnley play. So, when they come to our place, it's going to be. Actually, they played like that before, didn't they? Where they man-marked Dunk, I think, which was an interesting move.
But, yeah. I mean, with the new rules for referees this season, I mean, we're wondering whether Neil Warnock's going to be the first person to
yellows and reds.
I mean, if you don't know, basically there is...
have a yellow card for being Neil Warnock.
You can get... Basically, referees are going to get booked this season if...
Managers are.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yes. Yeah. Referees are going to get booked as well.
Yes, they should
by
be.
Me.
They should
usually.
Be.
Usually.
Yes. So, okay, gun to head then, AD. Mm-hmm. Who are your three for relegation? Same for you, Justin.
AD, would you like to go first?
Cardiff.
Yeah.
Southampton.
Okay.
Palace.
Is that a wish list or is that a think or a hope?
I think Newcastle could possibly be down there as well. I mean, they're a basket case of a club at the moment, and you're not quite sure exactly what Mike Ashley's thinking is. That the whole thing about bonuses is...
Just bought the House of Fraser, isn't he?
Well, I mean, the bonus thing, I don't quite understand the full ins and outs of it, but basically, he's basically saying, this is what you're getting paid, you're not getting any bonuses for cup runs or anything like that. And basically, does that show lack of ambition? I don't know. I mean,
I'd go for Huddersfield. I think they've stood still to a certain extent. I don't think you can do that in the Premier League. I would also go for Cardiff because I think they'll try and be Burnley, but they won't be quite as good. And then maybe Southampton. I've just got to think about them again.
It's the Mark Hughes thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got to think about him.
He's going to get booked as well, isn't he?
Yes, just for being Mark Hughes.
Alan?
Okay, real stuff on the line. I'm going to say, I can't not say Cardiff. I'm going to really stick my neck out and say West Ham, because they just cannot. Gel whoever they buy, they cannot gel.
I disagree massively. I think they'll do really well. I think if they can keep Jack Wilshere fit, and that's a big if, he will be a massive player for them. And they've bought very well.
But actually,
and
no
they've
one
got
said
a
West
really
Brom,
good manager.
And the other one I'm going to say is I think that Fulham will get relegated as well. I do not actually buy into this whole big money thing. So
okay, well there you go. Alan has spoken. Fulham to get relegated.
I think it's just too easy. I mean, I think Huddersfield will struggle. They've got the second season syndrome, absolutely. But I just think they've got, you know, they're very together still, and I think that counts for a lot.
Okay, well there you go. Alan has spoken on the Fulham being relegated there, and
it will bite me on the backside. Don't worry,
it will. And I can't say. But this has been the Albion Roar. But thank you, of course, to Justin Brentel, to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.